Hello and welcome back to Layover. And you've made it. Congratulations.
Almost. Is this not off-season?
Is this count as an in-season episode?
I think this is the first in-season piece of content.
Okay.
Because it's the first thing related to the season. It's the game design episode.
I guess it counts. I suppose I would agree that it counts.
The season starts now.
So we're in season on the layover before we're in season on the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know what it is? I agree. This is the beginning of the season for the layover. Jet Lag, the game, is not in season, but the layover is in season. I agree with that assessment.
Well, I think the Jet Lag Expanded Universe is in season. Jet Lag, the YouTube channel, or the Nebula channel might not be yet, but the Expanded Universe is. For example, it's like NFL preseason. You know, NFL's still going on, might not be the full season, but for marketing purposes, they certainly imply that, you know, it started.
Sure.
This is like NBA summer ball.
I guess that is a good comparison. I've been seeing a lot of people really suffering in the trenches on Reddit. I do think that this has been one of our longest off seasons, right?
Yeah, it was a little on the longer end, I think.
A little bit, but not significantly.
Maybe second longest?
Yeah, and it was also like over summer when, I mean, I don't know what the logic is there, actually, because, like, there's the most number of things to do over the summer. You guys should be outside, touch grass or something.
Yeah.
Or play the hide-and-seek home game.
Oh, whoa, you're so good at this, Sam.
Thank you, Ben. Okay, so as you probably know, the season is Tag. Again.
Tag All-Stars.
And I really had to lock in to not say hide-and-seek there. Because I always confuse tag and hide and seek.
Mm-hmm. It is true.
But Tag All-Stars, what does that mean? Who's an all-star? Well, we do not believe in participation trophies, and therefore you are only an all-star if you have gotten one of the real Victor trophies for Jet Lag. Mostly because there were three of them.
And yeah.
We needed three.
Here's the start of the game design discussion. A big reason why we wanted to do this now was that we had three people who had won.
Yes.
And we were like, we need to do it before that number gets bigger.
Yeah, the reason that season 14 was a three-player game and not a four, we actually really struggled to come up with a three-player game for season 14. But we realized that if we had a new guest on or brought on an old guest who hadn't yet won for season 14, that we would risk actually having too many all-stars to do a season like this. So we needed season 14 to be a three-player game, and then we needed to do this now.
Yeah, and I think this is actually probably the furthest out we've ever, like, planned a season.
Yeah.
Because we knew we were doing this all the way back in, like, I think the very start of the year or something.
Yeah, I think probably.
Sort of made the plan.
I think we probably landed on it like right after filming Shingen Showdown. Because I guess in Shingen Showdown, if you and Tom had won, then we would have had four winners and that would have been complicated. So I don't think we had the idea then.
I think we had discussed it, but then we didn't like lock it in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've discussed something like this, I feel like, for years in different ways.
Yeah, no, we've recognized, because we've been at three winners for a while now, since, I guess, Arctic Escape. And we've discussed the idea of an all-star season ever since then. Sort of just didn't fit with, like, the cadence of, you know, what we're filming when. And finally, it is now time. And let me tell you, I was amazed that we were able to find dates that worked for everyone roughly around when we wanted to film. And even more so, I was amazed that everyone arrived on time in Paris, healthy. No one, you know, with any major ailments. And we started filming exactly at 6 a.m. in Charleville as we intended to.
Yes.
And man, I was happy when we got to that point.
And can I say this? Is this a spoiler to say? Also, no one got sick through the filming.
Nope.
So true.
We all made it.
I think that's not a spoiler. I think we're allowed to say that.
Yeah.
Everybody was okay the whole time. We were able to film the season without people getting sick.
Except for Ben's knees.
But that happens every season.
True.
Well, yeah, Ben's knees are always in a bad situation.
Yeah,
it was quite the leap because, I mean, we've only ever had one guest before. And I think we were all a lot more worried than we needed to be for something like this because it was just like, I don't know. And it was also like, you know, Adam and I had, I mean, unless you count Amy, but I wouldn't count Amy. Like, Adam and I have never been paired with a guest for the duration of filming a season.
It's true.
And so that was also a whole, you know, thing that we were worried about is like, how do you do that good? But I think it was fine. I think it went well.
I thought it went great.
Yeah.
I mean, the game design for this, this is not going to be one of our most complicated game design episodes because, you know, most of Tag obviously has already been designed. But one element of game design that you're sort of alluding to, Ben, is just the choice of who was partnered with who. Do we want to go over how we made these choices?
Well, sure. Although I feel like we had immediate consensus about the right configuration.
Yes, it's true. We all immediately agreed about who should go with who.
Yeah.
So it was hardly a process, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there was a world where we wanted to like mix vibes on the teams and like, you know, have a mix of vibes on each team. But we realized that like the better way to do this, at least content-wise, was for each team to kind of have its own vibe. And so you could like, especially if you were new to the show and you sort of like didn't know any of us, you could sort of get a sense that like this team is kind of this way and this team is kind of this way and this team is kind of this way, and that like it would be easier to tell us apart and like characterize us if we tried to match vibes as well as we could. And I think we did that kind of perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody can figure out what the rough calculation is here. Michelle and I
basically
are the two.
Toby and I are the goats.
Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course.
Undefeated, cannot be defeated. Literally, you know, the most winning jet lag pairing of all time by percentage.
By percentage, sure. I would say, you know, the simplest sort of alignment is me and Michelle are the most stressed out, high-strung people. Ben and Brian are sort of the most chaotic people. And Sam and Toby are the most sort of like in the middle ones.
Boo.
And also they are just a really good pair because they've won the last two times they've played. So.
Okay. I'll take that. I reject being middle.
Yeah. But yeah, I think what Ben said is right, which is like, that was the ultimate argument we made from a content perspective of like, it's going to be easier for people to follow if it's just like, Adam and Michelle are the stressed out team. Oh, Brian and Ben are the chaotic team, as opposed to like, we have a balance of like each team. So now it's like, then you really have to track six personalities. In this situation, you really kind of only have to track three vibes. So I think it's easier.
Yeah. And so the next thing that I think we pretty immediately agreed on is switching to a system where basically the next runner is whoever makes the catch.
Yes.
Because I guess we haven't necessarily said it explicitly, but it's certainly implied in like the trailer, which you might have seen by now, for example. But, you know, it's not like we have two people acting as the runner and four all collectively acting as the chasers. We like for a brief moment considered that, but realized it would just be like incoherent to have four people sort of like acting together and all that. It would just be way too much. And on the flip side, you know, there's an opportunity to have two teams of chasers, which is kind of an interesting, fresh spin. And one benefit of that is that we could have a system that sort of fixes for the inherent unfairness of Tag, where basically whoever makes the tag gets to go next, gets to have the next opportunity to make it to their end location, or at least make it towards it. And that, we thought, was a great idea because, you know, I think we've all recognized that the rotation system has a downside in that, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily unfair because we do sort of like random allocation of who does it, but it's like once the game starts, it's unfair because certain players get more opportunity, they get more runs. So this way, additional runs are based on merit. I will say though, and I think this is what we'll spend a good time discussing, this ended up being much more of a game design headache than we expected. How to make it work with two chaser teams. Like,
yes.
I think when we initially discussed it, it was like, oh yeah, we just have two chaser teams. And then whoever tags first gets to go next. And it's easy as that, right? Not quite.
Yeah. Well, I'll say for starters that I think that the idea of doing tag, but with two chaser teams where whoever catches the person becomes the next runner, is the piece of game design that is, I would say, both the most significant change we made and the one I'm the most pleased with, because I just think it's a really elegant adjustment to tag that makes it work with this number of people really well. And I would say makes it like a more interesting game and like evolves the game a little bit, but it's still very recognizable. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but in my recollection, when we came up with that idea, that was when we were like, okay, yeah, we should do this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, oh, this works great. Yeah. Like tag, original map, two teams, you know, we were like, yes.
The logic was like, okay, let's bring in new people and some new gameplay elements, but have them duke it out on the original map. Sort of like,
yes,
in some ways, the most iconic jet lag game in the most iconic jet lag region,
yes,
you know, that they've all watched, you know, two seasons that we've done on this map with the same rules. So now how do we decide, you know, the GOAT, the best jet lag guest of all time? They got to play for it.
Yes.
In some ways, the best jet lag game of all time.
Yeah, I think we all were pretty easily compelled that the, you know, it's the most iconic, you know, if we're going to have the All-Stars come for this grand tournament, do it on the most iconic stage, which is original tag map.
Well, also in many ways, I think we realized through Tag 3 that the original tag map was probably a lot better than we gave it credit for, and maybe is like the one place where that game really does shine perfectly. And like, I think that this is something we learn about our original tag format a lot, and it was something that we learned about our original tag format when we were trying to design this season, which is that like that game happens to be balanced really delicately. And really, in my opinion, really well. And I think that, like, that was kind of happenstance. Like, I don't think that we knew what we were doing enough when we were designing the third season of the show to, like, be perfectly balancing games like that. But every time you make a tweak to tag, I do think you sort of risk unbalancing it. And so, obviously, like, I think the most obvious problem with adding a second team of chasers is that, like, well, you have now completely changed the balance of the game.
Yes.
Probably the best sign of this is the fact that y'all might be able to remember better than me, but like we've never had consensus on what is the best end location. Like we've always had, you know, in the moments leading up to 6 a.m.,
yeah,
we draw straws and people get to decide which end location they go for. And it might not have been the different one every time, but it's definitely not been the same one every time.
Yeah, I think my opinion has changed many times.
Yeah, mine too, for sure. Yeah. It's like at first I thought Borkum was just by far the worst, but then, you know, you kind of proved us wrong. I mean, it still has its disincentives and all that, but I've always been pretty split between Jersey and Zermatt because they're both good, but for different reasons. And anyway, yeah, never had consensus. Whereas like, I think when we did Tag 3 in Northern Italy, we came to a pretty strong consensus about what the kind of hierarchy of locations were.
Yes, which I believe yours best, and then mine and Ben's close.
Certainly yours worst.
Mine worst, Ben's middle.
Probably, yeah. I think Ben and I's were probably closer in goodness than ours to yours, but yeah.
Mine was horrible.
Yeah, well, you should have done better at drug straws or whatever, however we...
Yeah, well, anyway... But back to the thing about the two teams of chasers, it creates issues that you wouldn't necessarily think of immediately. If you come up with this idea and you're just like, great, super elegant, no problem.
We know that because we didn't identify them immediately.
We did not immediately identify these issues.
We sort of like got to like a couple weeks out from the season and we're like, okay, we should probably figure out, you know, those minor rules things.
Yeah.
Like, do they have a tracker or not? And it should just take, what, 15 minutes, right? Wrong.
Yeah. So I would say that the most significant problem, I would say that there's one problem that is, I would say, by far the most significant, probably. You guys let me know if you disagree, if there are others. But the most significant problem is, let's say you have two teams of chasers and one person running. Let's say that one team of chasers is getting quite close to completing the catch. And the other team of chasers, you know, they're an hour behind the other team, right? It's pretty clear that the other team of chasers is going to make the catch and this team of chasers is behind and they're not going to make it, right?
And they know it because they have a tracker on.
Yeah, yeah. And they have trackers on each other. Yes, they have trackers on each other. In that case, the logical thing to do, if you're the team of chasers that's behind, is to position yourself such that you'll be able to catch the next team of runners, the team that is currently chasers, that's about to make the catch and become runners. You should give up on trying to actually make a catch. And you should just try to position yourself in between the soon-to-be chasers and their end location, right? Now, this is a problem for many reasons, right? One, I think we all agree it's kind of lame and not really in the spirit of the game as much as we want.
Yeah, especially because, like, usually with that amount of time, like, the amount of time you have between kind of recognizing that the other team probably has got it and actually the catch happening, you can usually position yourself pretty well
right.
into, like, a big choke point that they're just going to have to go through.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, in this game, like, if you can manage to get ahead of them, like, that run is more often than not already over.
Yes.
Right? And so it's like, if that is able to happen before the round even begins, then it's like the game is just going to be broken.
So, I mean, there are sort of two different elements of this. One is whether or not trackers are on for your fellow seekers. And then another one is just how do you adjust for this in general, right? So we were basically saying, okay, well, if both teams always have trackers on, this is going to be more of a problem. It's more incentivized. But we were also pretty worried about neither team having their trackers on because we were worried, frankly, I think, coming off of Snake about games that were too much about speculation of like where other teams were. We were worried that it's like, okay, well, if neither team has their tracker on, you're going to have to spend a good amount of time just trying to be like, well, I think maybe the other chasers are here, maybe they're here. You might be doing all of this work of making all these guesses about where they are and what they're doing. And I think that's not really what tag is from a chaser side. And also I think we had learned in Snake, like we shouldn't lean on that too much as a mechanic.
Well, it's sort of either that or a different boring version where the chasers just never separate.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of cases, there is like a clear best route. And if they don't have each other's location, they're somewhat incentivized to keep doing what the other team is doing.
Yeah. So what we landed on for trackers was what I think is a pretty good solution, which was that the trackers are optional, right? And this relates to a separate component of the game design, which is that there is inherently in this game an interesting dynamic where the chaser teams need to decide whether they are going to work together or whether they are not going to work together.
Yeah.
It's time for my analogy.
Okay, great. What's your analogy?
What's your analogy?
Oh, you'll remember my analogy and you'll love my analogy. It's just like Formula One.
Oh, right.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. You did say this.
It's just like Formula One.
Because, of course, everyone who watches Jet Lag also watches Formula One, seemingly. But for the few of you who don't, there's an interesting kind of strategic dynamic in Formula One where basically there's 10 teams, each with two drivers. And there's two different things that they're competing for over the season. There's kind of the collective team championship. You know, for example, does McLaren get more points than Ferrari collectively between their two drivers? And there's the individual driver championship, as in, does Lando Norris get more points than Oscar Piastri? Unlikely. But that means that there's sort of these competing incentives within a team where they do want to win both championships. Like, quite literally, they get big, like, multi-million dollar bonuses. Beyond the prestige of it all, like millions and millions of dollars for each championship they win. So they really do want to win both, but they also want to win their individual one. And there are a lot of opportunities where you can help your teammate by kind of somewhat sacrificing your own race, particularly as it relates to, like, for example, like one scenario is basically they can open up their rear wing. It's called DRS to give them a little bit of speed boost if they're within 1 second of the car in front of them. Oftentimes, you know, the cars are equal, so they're often next to each other. So like the car in front could slow down to have the car behind stay within 1 second to prevent that car from potentially getting passed by the opponent car even before that. Ben and Adam are zoning out.
No, I'm blocking.
Oh my God, I'm blacking out. This is like, you guys ever watch like those Peanuts movies where like when the adults talk, it's like trumpets. It's like womp, 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 womp. That is what happens when Sam talks about Formula 1.
No, I actually have to tell you that I actually followed all of that because I watched the F1 movie.
This is crazy.
You're now an expert. Okay.
This is crazy.
And the F1 movie does sort of deal with this quite a bit.
Well, the F1 movie, getting slightly off track, the F1 movie, we actually made it. Ben, you remember the HI video about Crashgate? I think Amy wrote that, right?
Yeah, I didn't. I said I don't want to touch that.
Well, I don't know if you watched it. Probably not. But that was about like one of the biggest controversies ever in F1. And basically a driver intentionally crashing to help their teammates. And then the F1 movie, small spoiler alert if you haven't seen it and intend to, it's basically that happening every single race. So like the premise is he does the biggest controversy to ever exist in F1 that led to like many people getting fired and like banned from the sport, except he does it in every single race with like zero repercussions.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, kind of cool. Anyway, TLDR, it's kind of like Formula One because this is what leads to, at times, there's always this weird vibe between teammates of like, yes, we're friends. We like each other. We help each other. But also, I mean, this is literally happening right now this year where Norris and Piastri are so equally matched and competing with each other just as they're competing to make McLaren a winner. So anyway, that's the analogy.
I think that this was a circumstance in game design where whenever it is possible to give people agency, if that agency doesn't break the game, I think it's good to have. And so like,
yes.
I think that we thought it was really interesting for people to be able to choose kind of on the fly whether they were working together or they were working against each other or the two teams of chasers. And I think that it would be a lot easier to balance the game if we were like, we are forcing them to work together or we are forcing them to work in opposition. Yeah. But obviously, like, we were really hoping we could figure out a configuration where that could change over the course of a round. And I do think we were able to do that ultimately.
Because I think that, like, there's a world, too, where, like, I mean, we read the rules. We could have said, you're not allowed to work together. We could have said, there's no communication between chasers. You cannot speak with them at all. You know, like, we could have made that rule, totally. Or we could have, I mean, maybe this is a little bit of a softer rule. But we also could have said, as we have said in the past with the two chasers, you have to work together. You have to fully work together in all ways. Like, and that's maybe softer to enforce, but like, but I agree, Ben, like it was going to be more interesting to do it this other way. Now, I guess this sort of leads us to what I would say is the other significant game design change, which is the power-ups, right?
Yeah, TLDR, we thought that maybe the game is harder if you have two people trying to tag you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we did have we talked about a lot of different approaches to balancing this. Like, I think one of our earliest solutions was to do something to the chaser's tracker on the runner. Like, we had talked about, like, well, maybe, like, the tracker switches off between the two chaser teams and that they don't both have it at the same time. So like at any given time, one of the teams knows where they are, but one of the teams doesn't know where they are. And like, maybe that would be able to balance it, but that had all kinds of problems.
Yeah. We also considered forcing the chaser team that didn't make the catch to basically get to the location of the catch.
Yeah.
And having them all start from that location. Because of course, that's how round one starts.
Right.
Both chaser teams start in Charleville, both with a 45-minute delay. The reason we didn't do that is, one, honestly, just for time, because who knows how far the other team is. It could take, you know, hours. We want to rather just kind of be filming. And also because it marginally fixes the problem, the balancing problem, but it doesn't entirely fix the balancing problem. So yeah, to be clear, like the chaser team that does not make the catch, they just pause wherever they are.
Yeah.
If they're on transit, they get off. And they wait out the same 45-minute period. But what that means is that theoretically, it's possible that they are effectively in front of the new runner.
And we assumed that it was not only possible, because again, we just talked before about like, we didn't want them to be doing this on purpose, right? But even if they aren't doing it on purpose, I would say it's probably like, in general, likelier than not that they are in front of them, right? Because if you assume that the catch that happens, let's assume that on average, the other chaser team is somewhere between a half hour and an hour behind them, which I think would be a relatively reasonable assumption to make, you know, for starters. They probably, they're behind them. And in general, even though it's a triangle, you're going to be going roughly most of the time back towards those chasers. So like we still had to deal with this problem because like what we were really worried about was, what if the way that this game plays out is just like, it's your turn to go and the first chaser team, you know, they have their 45 minute pause, but then the other chaser team is just like, they're already in front of you. And so every run ends in like 2 hours because you just get tagged and then it's your turn, but there's already someone in front of you and then you get tagged, right? So we had to come up with a solution to this.
Yeah.
And we talked about lots of solutions. As you mentioned, we talked about everybody has to get back to the same spot. We decided not to do that. I mean, in large part, just because like there were going to be instances in which that really lost us a lot of time. We were like, there are going to be times when we're going to lose, you know, especially we wanted to incentivize the chaser teams to split up and
right.
take different strategies. And if that had happened, it could take, I mean, God knows how long, could take 6 hours for the chaser to get back to where the catch ended up happening. And now we've lost 6 hours of game time. Like, that was,
you yeah. know. And we did want to keep our format of 3 days of 14 hours.
Yes.
Just because it's always worked well. It's kind of led to the amount of action that leads to a good season. We also think this game really, even more than most, really is, it's worth having those long 14-hour filming days to reduce the impact of the rest period. You know, reduce the frequency of having a rest period kind of impact strategy because the impacts are pretty significant. So, you know, we wanted to keep it that. And it's hard, honestly. I don't know if we could do 4 14-hour days, especially with guests, because, you know, even 3 14-hour days is a lot because, you know, you don't necessarily get full nights of sleep by the time yeah. you get to a hotel, get fed, you know, all that.
I remember when we first did jet lag, I feel like we had this thing that we said, I don't even know if this was true, but I think we all believed it more or less, where we were like, 3 days is the limit to what you can do that, like, if you're asking your body to do something really difficult, 3 days is sort of the limit of what you can handle.
The thinking was like sleep deprivation. It's like,
yeah,
without relying on full nights of sleep, 3 days is kind of the at least limit before things start to go pretty yeah. south.
Like, that's why when we do past 3 days, we have to have a longer rest period. But yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have still not revealed what our mechanic is for solving this problem in part.
Power-ups.
So I think that we were all relatively pleased with the idea of using power-ups as a solution because, you know, we talked about all these things like, okay, well, maybe one of the teams has an extra long jail period. Maybe, you know, like some systematized thing. And ultimately what we landed on was, if you solve this through power-ups, you give agency. Again, Ben mentioned agency before. You give agency to the players as to how they implement nerfing this because they're the ones who are in the situation and they know what the best thing for them is going to be, right? So these power-ups, we changed our power-ups basically. Well, another thing that we've realized over time is just we never use the power-ups
no.
because we always, even if we make them cheap, we just keep not using them because we're trying so hard to optimize our runs, right? That we are just like saving our money and saving opportunity for later. So this time we were like, we're going to force our hand. We're going to make people use power-ups by making the power-ups free, but single use. So in this game, there are 3 power-ups. And in each run, you get access to each of them for free, but you can only use them each once. So it's more like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where you get like the lifelines, but then once you use them, then they're used.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, we tried to fix this power-up problem in Tag 3, and it just didn't work at all. Like, we didn't use the power-ups any more than we did before, and it was just like, it was just pointless. And the problem is we kept being like, well, you can't make the power-ups too cheap or they're going to get spammed. And so I do think it was this thing of being like, okay, just make them 3 really useful ones and you get them once. And it's like the cost of using them is that you can't use them later in your run. And I do think that we finally, after 4 seasons of Tag, cracked this.
What are the power-ups, Ben?
Oh, the power-ups. The power-ups are, so you got the classic. the double up power up that like doubles the value of your next challenge, but also doubles the veto period. This is something that in the past has been super abused in a way that I think we did not like, because there were just too many scenarios where it was like, well, okay, like you're just gonna do that like a ton. And so that you can only use once. Then you've got a power up where you can turn off your tracker for how long was it? I think it was 15 minutes.
I think it was longer than, I don't remember. We have it written down somewhere.
You turn off your tracker for everyone for like 15 minutes. This is the cloak power up. And so this is a power up that could let you, you know, like if you were expecting them to be at a station, you could maybe slip by using this power up. And then finally, the last and perhaps most important power up to fix the problems that we've been having that are balancing problems is just the freeze power up, where you can freeze one team for 45 minutes, put them basically into a jail period, the standard jail period that you start with. But this has a little wrinkle, which is that it takes 5 minutes to charge. We call it 5 minutes to charge because what we didn't want this being used for is a team is right in front of you. They're about to tag you and you're just like freeze and then you run away. Lame. That would be quite lame. So it's like, okay, you have to like choose a team that you want to freeze in 5 minutes. And this, again, would allow, like, if you know that a team is in front of you because they were the team that didn't tag you in the last round, you know they're in front of you, you can pretty reliably freeze them when you would be right around where they are and get past them and continue on your run without immediately having your run end. Yeah. But also that, like, you know, if that was not how a round was set up and you don't have a team right in front of you, that there are many things you could do with this power up. And yeah, I think I'm pleased with this. It's two birds with one stone. It's a beautiful implementation that fixes all of our problems, I think.
And I think that the idea too, that it was interesting was like, you can only freeze one team, but you don't know where the teams are except for at the beginning of the round. So the hope too was like, you'd be likeliest to use this early to solve that problem we've talked about of like a team is already in front of you. Because if you wait a really long time into your round, you know, you don't know who is closest to you, right?
Right.
So you could guess, but the hope was, you know, yeah, you're most incentivized to use it early and hopefully to use it for the purpose that we brought up. And the idea is, at least hopefully, because there are two teams of chasers, it doesn't make it overall easier for you. It just makes it the same as the normal difficulty. Because it's like, yeah, you can freeze one team, but there's another team that isn't frozen that's coming after you, right? So at least hopefully it will, you know, not make the runner overpowered.
Yep. I think that's pretty much all of the game design.
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we did.
I mean, you know, obviously we have a whole new deck of
challenges.
Deck of challenges. And, you know, the fun thing here is that we can have challenges that involve two people, which actually opens up the possibilities of what you can do by quite a lot.
Yeah.
So that's fun. And that'll be, there's, I think, a lot of fun ones in this season. But yeah, I mean, we wanted it to still feel like tag as much as possible. So we tried not to take a very heavy hand to this game.
Yeah. It might be worth saying we sort of tried to make the challenges like ever so slightly easier to help balance out the difficulty.
Fact that there were two teams of chasers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So basically they probably will look less failable than in prior seasons and maybe at times quicker.
Yeah. I'd say that that's probably right.
But yeah, I mean, is there anything more to add?
No. I mean, I guess I will just say I really like this season. I think this is a really interesting one. It's a really fun one. It's got a lot of super weird, exciting moments.
I think I would echo that. And let me know if it gets too spoilery in your opinion. But like, I think it'd be a reasonable concern for people to look at, you know, we've done tag three times. Is this just going to be the same thing again? And I will say wholeheartedly, it really is not. It's pretty different.
Yeah, I think the changes that were made to the game for this really do shake it up and make it feel really different. And yeah, I think people are going to like it a lot. I do.
Yep. You know what else people are going to like is the next episode of The Layover, because it's an extra special one.
Oh, right.
Coming to you live from the Jet Lag the Game season 15 premiere in New York City.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. Also, we're sorry if you couldn't get tickets. We sort of figured that if we doubled the size of the theater and charged for tickets, that
we actually tripled the size of the theater
and charged for tickets, that everyone would be able to get a ticket. Alas, no, still it sold out so quickly.
Yeah.
Which kind of shocked us. So I don't look, maybe the next time we do this, we're gonna have to do it in Madison Square Garden or something.
Oh, here, you know what? You know what? I know what we should vamp about for the last little bit of the podcast if we want to fill it out a little bit more. If we want to get more into the 40s.
Let's hear it.
We're in the 40s.
Yeah, but I think with cuts, I think it's not. I don't think we are. I think if you take all the things we're cutting, we're probably lower. We don't have to use it. I think that it's potentially just worth chatting briefly about the fact that Michelle did the plane thing.
The plane thing is crazy.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet, so I have not much
content. Oh my gosh, you have to watch it.
I know, I've been busy.
Dude, it's crazy.
How about we talk about this with Michelle once we have her on?
Okay, perfect.
I have a lot of questions for Michelle about that. I posted on my Instagram yesterday. I was like, it's crazy that she even talks to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about it with her on the podcast.
Okay. Fine.
I also have questions. All right. Let's wrap up. Well, we hope you're hyped for the season. We're hyped. We're so hyped.
I feel pretty hyped.
Yeah, because it has been a bit of a long off season. And
yes.
I'm especially hyped for jet lag. How do I say this? It'll be nice to have a season that I think is, let's say, more traditional, back to our roots than Snake. Do you like my vocabulary choice?
I think that was good. Are you trying to avoid saying that people didn't like Snake?
I'm trying to avoid saying that I didn't like Snake.
Well, sure.
No, I mean, I think we've made our thoughts clear. It wasn't the catastrophe, but not what we pan out for. But this, I think, is what we hoped it would be.
I think we're back in form this time.
We've never been more back. We're the backest we've ever been.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a real bad if we're wrong about that, but... And they can refer to this soundbite. But yeah. Anyway, I hope you look forward to that. It's possible that there's maybe a special little surprise coming before that. I don't know. Who knows?
Okay, cool. We can just say that. When are we allowed to talk about it?
It's possible. It's always possible.
Do people not know? I guess no. People don't know what the little surprise is going to be. We haven't told people about the little surprise yet.
There could always be little surprises, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, we should talk about that at some point.
Well, look forward to a little surprise. Once people know what the little surprise is, there's much... Maybe in the next off season, we can talk in great detail about what this little surprise was. Because it's very interesting.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Who knows?
But who knows? Right, who knows?
Bye.
Bye.